From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, February 2nd, 2017. And on this day, the State Senate has voted to ask the Maine Supreme Court to review the constitutionality of the ranked choice voting measure approved by voters in November. A Superior Court judge agrees that the due process rights of a Maine State prison inmate were violated when he was put in solitary confinement for nearly 2 years. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Maine voters approved a measure this past fall to adopt the ranked choice voting system for statewide elections. Now, lawmakers who are trying to implement the new law are asking the Maine Supreme Court to weigh in on whether it's constitutional, Mal-Leary reports.
Last year, Maine Attorney General Janet Mills raised questions about the proposal because it appeared to clash with language in the state constitution. For decades, the candidate that got the most votes in a contest has been declared the winner. But under the new system, voters will indicate their top multiple choices in order of preference, and the candidates with the fewest votes are eliminated until someone has a majority. Democratic State Senator Shenna Bellows of Manchester, the former director of the ACLU in Maine, says the voters have spoken and the legislature should follow their will.
We do not want to set a precedent of the legislature turning to the courts every time a law is passed to seek an advisory opinion as to the constitutionality of our legislation.
But the Senate decided to get a second opinion, voting 24-10 to ask the justices to look at the proposal. That majority included supporters of ranked choice voting like Augusta Republican Senator Roger Cates, an attorney, who argued it's better to get an opinion now than implement the new system and get a surprise ruling after next year's elections.
We can do it now easily, or we can do it later, when it's in the midst of chaos and when it'll be much more expensive for us to get involved. And remember that it's the same court that's going to decide this ultimately one way or another.
Another Republican supporter of ranked choice voting, Senator Eric Brakey of Auburn, also was in favor of seeking an opinion.
I do think that there are some very serious constitutional questions here that even the Attorney General has raised.
Portland Democratic Senator Mark Dion, an attorney, says he believes the measure is constitutional, and he questioned whether the court would even consider the Senate's request for an opinion on legislation that was already law.
Democracy is messy. We may have concerns about how the people have expressed their will, but they have expressed it.
Kyle Bailey, the campaign chairman for the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting, agrees, but he says the group is ready to fight in court to defend the law, should the High Court agree to consider the matter.
The 400,000 people who voted for ranked choice voting in Maine are going to do everything in their power to defend this law and our direct democracy through the citizen initiative process.
The Supreme Court operates on its own timetable. If it decides to consider the request, it will likely ask for written arguments from all sides of the issue, and may schedule oral arguments so the justices can question lawyers on the issues raised in the written arguments. Once all the arguments are heard, the court has historically answered such questions from the legislature rather quickly. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
President Donald Trump's controversial order to ban travel from 7 Muslim-majority countries has sparked protests in Maine and across the country. But Trump's ban has not diminished his support among some voters in Lewiston, an historically Democratic stronghold that has become a resettlement area for Somali immigrants. Steve Missler reports.
It only takes a short walk down snowy, wet Lisbon Street to experience the culture clash that has shaped Lewiston politics in recent years. On a recent morning, a group of Somali men is busy unloading a truck and carrying the boxes into one of the street's halal markets. Nearby, a group of Somali women converse as they leave their apartment. And then, a young white woman walks by, commenting on the legal status of the Somalis to her male companion. Around the corner from this crossroad of cultural change is Simonis' hot dog stand. It's Hot Dog Wednesday. That means $1 hot dogs. And the place is bustling with hungry customers and Trump supporters.
Well, I think he's doing a lot. I mean, every day, like I told you, every day I'm turning on CNN to see what the hell he did today, who he pissed off, or, you know.
Jim Nelson voted for Trump, and he's happy he did. Nelson doesn't always like how the president acts, but he says Trump is quickly fulfilling campaign promises. That includes the president's recent travel ban, which affects immigrants from 7 countries, including Somalia.
This country was made on immigrants. I mean, that's exactly why the United States exists. We're a melting pot, you know, and we can't lose sight of that.
But Nelson says he's truly mystified by the local protests sparked by Trump's order.
But on the front page of yesterday's paper, you got this little girl crying, and she's a Somalian, and she can't see her grandmother, and oh my God, you know, she can't see her grandmother for 6 months. What about the people that got blown up down in Florida? You know, what about those people? They can't ever see their people again.
Trump made 4 campaign stops to Maine in an attempt to swipe one of its 4 electoral votes. He succeeded by deploying rhetoric about the loss of manufacturing jobs. But he also stoked a simmering belief among some that Maine's newest immigrants are different than the mostly white ones that preceded them. He asserted, without evidence, that Somali resettlement areas are enclaves for terrorist recruiting efforts. He also asserted that Somali immigrants are draining public assistance programs, a touchy subject in Lewiston, which spent roughly half of its temporary assistant budget on asylum seekers last year. Trump's order could freeze the influx of asylum seekers, at least in the short term, and that has the support of local hairdresser Marie LeBlanc.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be stopped, but I think it's just to stop these people, the terrorists, from coming in. It's just a slowdown. It's not completely cutting them off, you know.
Like many in Lewiston, Marie's family immigrated from Canada. She says the new arrivals benefit from generous public assistance programs unavailable to her relatives, and she's also anxious about how the newcomers impact the city.
And we're not populating a lot anymore. They are, so, and that's right. I mean, and they're going to be a stronger force in the years to come.
Well, he's doing what he said he's going to do.
Al Donovan owns a used car dealership in town. He says his customers have a spring in their step, excited about a businessman in the White House. He says Trump spoke to the silent majority, empowering people who had been forgotten and shamed for talking about their fears and concerns. And the protesters, he says, should start accepting the results of the election.
The unfortunate part is you have some adult children on the Democratic side that doesn't understand that it's time to work with the president and not against him. Give him a chance, you know, and they're not giving it to him.
And even some Lewiston residents who didn't vote for Trump and find him to be offensive and divisive are willing to see what he can do.
I say give him a chance, you know.
45-year-old Keith Sabin says he voted for the first time last year, and it wasn't for Trump.
I was totally against him before, but now I'm I don't know. I mean, I've got an open mind now.
In the meantime, the immigration issue is expected to stay front and center here, regardless of Trump's travel ban. Mayor Bob McDonald has sounded the alarm about a new spike in asylum seekers and their impact on the city's welfare budget. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
A Superior Court judge has sided with a Maine State Prison inmate who claimed his due process rights were violated when he was put in solitary confinement for nearly 2 years. And Justice Michaela Murphy says now that that prisoner is back in general population, she's asking both sides to weigh in about whether he should be entitled to any additional relief. Susan Sharon has more.
Over the past 2 years, we've been following the case of Douglas Burr, a Maine State prison inmate serving a 60-year sentence for murder. Burr had spent about a third of his time behind bars without any disciplinary problems when he suddenly found himself being transferred to the Special Management Unit. That's another word for segregation or solitary confinement. At the Maine State Prison in Warren, it means living in an 8-foot by 12-foot cell.
June 12th, 2014, I went down to SEG. I came out in SEG April 1st, 2016.
In segregation, the lights are always on so that prisoners can be observed at all times, and meals are delivered through a slot in the door.
The first 10 months I was in solitary confinement, I was under what they call administrative segregation, the most restricted classification you can be under. It's 1 hour out of your cell, 5 days a week. The rest, you're in your cell at all times. You get 3 showers a week, 1 visit per week, and then you just have books, pretty much, is all you have in your room.
Why Burr stayed in solitary so long remains unclear. Prison officials and their attorneys are unable to discuss the case while it's still pending. But according to depositions of prison staff, a prison investigation that included monitoring of Burr's mail and telephone calls uncovered evidence that Burr was trafficking in drugs with the assistance of his wife. That evidence has never been presented. No drugs were ever found, and Burr's wife was never charged. A disciplinary charge brought against Burr was eventually dropped. Still, prison officials refused to move him out of segregation. So after he exhausted the prison's grievance process, Burr filed an administrative appeal in Kennebec County Superior Court.
When we took the depositions of the individuals, we asked, what does Mr. Burr have to do to get out?
Eric Maynard is Doug Burr's attorney.
And what we heard repeatedly is that he has to accept responsibility for wrongdoing. So they wanted him to admit that he did something that they could not find him responsible for because they lacked the evidence.
As part of his complaint, Burr sought injunctive relief from prison officials and damages from Corporal Mark Engstveld, a guard who Burr said falsified a disciplinary report. Last week, Justice Michaela Murphy issued an order in the case.
The order from Justice Murphy rules in Mr. Burr's favor in finding that there were procedural irregularities with the state prison's grievance process and how they treated Mr. Burr. In fact, she found that there were procedural due process violations.
The judge ordered the Department of Corrections to refund monetary sanctions imposed against Burr, restoration of any good time lost, and his disciplinary record in the matter expunged. But she denied Burr's request for a transfer to Windham Correctional Center. She also said that no reasonable juror could conclude that Corporal Engstveld's conduct played a substantial part in Mr. Burr's lengthy confinement in the SMU. Now that Burr is back in general population, Justice Murphy wants Burr to clarify what he wants for relief and for both sides to brief her about why Burr should or should not be entitled to it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And that's This Day in Maine for February 2nd, 2017. Thanks to Keith Shortall, Jennifer Mitchell, Patty White, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.